Hello and welcome back to Blacker Couch Reviews. I'm your host, Christina. We're back for the second episode of Shogun, Chapter 2, Servants of Two Masters, written by Rachel Kondo and Justin Marks, directed by Jonathan Van Tulleken. I like this episode a lot. It is definitely a great follow-up because you were hooked. Now I need to see this all the way through. Had one of the most badass assassin scenes I've seen in quite some time. I definitely was having flashbacks to Westworld when they were in the Shogun world. And that was my favorite story arc from Westworld. So being fully immersed in seeing how the politics work and the very fine line you have to toe in dealing with the situation. And it's something that's brought home to John that they play games that you are not used to. Before we jump into the review, wherever you listen to this podcast, wherever good podcasts can be found, go down to the rating section, drop some stars, leave a review. My social media will be there as well. Like, share, subscribe. And if you want to send feedback, you can send that to blackercouch@gmail.com. Or you can leave a comment below. It's kind of hard to do an overview because things were about the shifting pieces on the chessboard. But for the most part, John finds himself where we ended last episode in front of Toranaga. He's questioned very quickly about where he come from, where his what his purpose is here by a Catholic priest who isn't quite as insistent he die as the other priest. He's then interrupted by Ishido, who tells or convinces him somewhat. It was almost like a passive aggressive, what are you doing with this puppet so close to your own possible execution. So he tosses him in prison where he meets a priest. There's back and forth between the council because of the barbarian, due to the fact that he has knowledge that can change their own interests, particularly since they need to set sail having this black ship that is a great boon to the other daimyos. So I think I finally got it broken down. The lords are daimyos. The former samurai that are disgraced are ronin. The samurai are the ones that fight for the shogun, right? And the shogun, as they pointed out in this episode, is the ultimate power title. And we find out that Toranaga, his family line in his blood is that of shoguns. He comes from a very ancestral past, whereas everyone else comes from this very new world order as a result of the civil wars that were happening prior to the three unifiers. This is information not provided in the show, although there is a little bit of a reference in the flashback from a year ago in Osaka, but we'll discuss the former Taiko in a later point in the podcast. But back to the overflow of things due to the Christians wanting John to be killed and Ishido having his hands tied because he wants the vote to get rid of Toranaga. Yabu, I still cannot say his first name. I be trying so hard. I will say the TV podcast industries did a way better job of the pronunciations than I did, and they know how to pronounce his name. I'm sticking with Yabu. He ends up being the clutch between the two lords that are enemies of each other, because the enemy of my enemy is my friend, and they are able to keep what could very much be an important pawn in the Christian war that is inevitably everyone believes to come, particularly as two of the other councilmen are in league with the Catholics. This then leads to an eye-opening conversation between Taranaga and Blackthorn, as well as Mariko and the young prince, where they find out that they belong to the Portuguese.
What did he say?
That was my favorite scene of the episode until the assassin showed up. Because my man's over here, Taranaga, knows exactly what the fuck is going on. And he really is playing friends and enemies the same way. I think that Mimi was correct in her assessment that he may not, you know, I kind of leaned towards last podcast that he's far more methodical and intentional. But the show does seem to be indicating it's more of a consequence of the fact that he has this great power and he is the threat to continuing or being able to take on this ancient title that Ishido very much wants, who is a very fascinating character himself. I love that about this show. That there's no one note type of character, except maybe the priest, where even if they're against who I'm rooting for, I still see the complexity and the understanding of where they're coming from, especially when you put yourself objectively into their worldview. It's the same thing with Yabu, who can instantly come off like a little finger, but he is a little finger, but you need people like him who's not necessarily gonna stab you in the heart, but if the winds are shifting, that's normal. There are many people in royal courts that were nobles that did the exact same thing, because that is the nature of the game as well. Yes, we want to believe in absolute loyalty, but that's simply kind of naive. Loyal to a point, especially if you're no longer there to be loyal to. It all culminates in the Christians making a move to take out John, but Taranaga, one step ahead, sees this and is able to end the threat before it happens. And he now understands the full weight of the value that John has. Let's talk about John. Definitely attractive, easy on the eyes. I'm not distracted by that, though. I'm more attracted to his fascination and beginning to take a great deal of like and respect for Taranaga, especially after he was at Death's Maker, and this is now the only person that stands between him and that. Although Yabu certainly influenced Taranaga being informed of the fact that he was being moved, but the idea that he's got his back despite the fact that he put him in prison, I think really went a long way in humbling himself to the powers that are unfolding. But he also gets to learn a lot about the man when he is in prison. So when he's brought before him the first time, Martin, the Catholic priest, is brought in, but he tells him, just because we have differing opinions on which gods doesn't mean that I am not honest to my faith. And you can tell because he actually is dressed in the robes of a Jesuit Catholic priest. Martin's an interesting person as well. And since he's integrated in this part of the story, he seems like someone who is an actual true believer, and he sees the mercantile class coming in with the more greedy side of the church. It's why Protestantism came into be in the first place, because there were those disillusioned with the way in which the Catholic Church did its business. It wasn't a business, not of, you know, warfare and forced conversion. And you see, they have these grandiose plans that don't involve integrating and teaching their faith as much as it is using their missionary goals to get a foot in the door of the land and then find it their duty to take over the power in that land with Catholic, with members that will be serving the Catholic Church. Doesn't even matter if they are of Japanese or Portuguese race. It's all about who is assimilating to the religious cause and benefiting. As I think one of the shoguns or daimyos was pointed out, like, he's religious, but only as much as he is ambitious and greedy. And that became the Catholic Church. That's why Martin Luther put out his 95 thesis, even though he had no intention of breaking away from the church. He just wanted to, you know, add some reform. But a movement happened out of his control, and now there's the Protestant religion. And I'm glad we confirm it's Queen Elizabeth's reign that we're in, because he says that my queen has no quarrel with you. Yeah, now. Because you would be a friend of their enemy. But ultimately, you see, even the friends of your enemies eventually becomes your enemies. And there's no way that John doesn't conceive of that possibility, or maybe that just simply isn't, that's not his place in whatever that grand design is, and that's fair. That's totally fair. I'm not responsible, you know, just because I'm setting off in my flag out there to conquer lands and to start these commerce trade routes. What happens in the future and the conversion, that's all with the church. So fair enough, John doesn't necessarily need to be held culpable for that, but his queen certainly and her counselors are not thinking of quarrel with you in the future, ultimately because they view you the same way you view John, as a barbarian, as less than civilized. After he pledges his reason for being here, he tries to keep denouncing that he's a pirate, but privateers, for the most part, were privates. And we know that he waged war against any Portuguese base that he came across, including Macau, which makes him not only just a privateer, but someone that is prepared to engage in war against the enemy, right? It's not only I want to open trade, it's I also want to fight the Portuguese. When he's put in prison, he sees that people are being taken out, but he runs into a Jesuit priest and he's wondering why he's in the cells if the Catholics have taken control of the situation. And it's very clear that he's a man of his faith and the Catholics have turned on him because he's probably spoken out against the idea of what they're doing here and what they intend to do here. They're growing their power base. They're using their enemies against them, or they're disgraced against them. And he is able to learn a lot of information. And I'm glad they had this moment of being able to learn. They're finding really smart ways of utilizing English dialogue. And I know that Mimi really appreciates that. And I still appreciate it even more so because it's not just, hey, we need to stop and have a break from subtitles. It's organically happening. So he tells him about how Toranaga, if he's claimed you, you're never leaving here. Also, kind of weird that he got you. When this man is facing his own execution, they're all turning against him. So there is an interest there. It's like, okay, who is this guy? After he meets him and he only questions him very briefly. And he allows Ishido to have him removed and put in prison. He thinks he's been abandoned by him. He thinks he's going to eventually meet his execution. But despite all of his blustering that, you know, you don't know who I am. What did he respond and say? Oh, I've met a dozen. I've met a thousand of you.
You know nothing, Jon Snow.
It goes back to the humbling aspect, right, of just because you believe yourself to be the smartest, most capable, most destined, whatever you want to tell yourself, and you gotta be, right? If you're gonna go out on the high seas to discover lands no one's ever found, you've gotta be a certain type of egocentric, crazy, and bold, and confident. You have to be able to do that to also lead men. So that's naturally a part of his charm and charisma, but he's also smart enough to realize, I'm kind of full of shit. I don't want to die here. And there's nothing I can do about it. I'm being very brave in the face of my own helplessness in the situation. Oh yeah, I'm a friend of, I'm a guest of Toranaga. Like, that doesn't mean shit. The daimyos did checkmate his ass, or Ishido's ass. So as he's being moved, he's actually saved by Toranaga. And then we get the scene where he is brought into the prince's garden. I forget his name every time. And he finally is able to break it down in a way that, no, we don't, there doesn't need to be a previous, like, he understands more now, like, you need something from me, you think you can get something from me, and I'm about to provide that shit to you. Mariko this time is brought in to do the translation without the priest. So, oh yeah, I'm working with you guys, but I'm teaching the prince about politics. Oh, I love fucking Toranaga. I love how he moves. It's so subtle and beautiful and artsy. But he has him in his garden, so this is more unofficial, right? And he gets him to say, hey, me and the Catholics were enemies because, look, they have split the world, Spain and Portugal, divided it between themselves and said one half gets this side, one half gets the other side. You are on the Portuguese side. He's like, did he say belong?
The fuck you say to me, you little shit?
Yes, sir. That's exactly what I just said. Not only have they split the world and decided from their places, because he has them draw a map of the world as he knows it. And he did a good job in those 2 minutes in the sand. And he explains all the undiscovered lands. Japan, when it was discovered, now belongs to Portugal. And eventually, their plan is to take out all of you guys and replace them with Catholics. And not only that, and which is crazy if you think about it, this place that's been existing for centuries at the dawn of time, one of the oldest civilizations in the entire world, and two other races from a continent they've never even heard of until they landed here, and now, with John learning about this place called England, have decided all of these things that you're not privy to. And not only that, they have no respect or even consideration on how you would feel about that. Honestly, it does boggle the mind. And that's what I love about this show. It puts you in that perspective, right? It's like, yeah, imagine being on the other side of that colonial mindset and the idea that they would exploit these civil wars. That's exactly how what they would do. They'd come in on these missionary, like, oh, we just want to preach the Lord. And, oh, we just happen to open up this trade because this is beneficial to each other. But then they creep along and they rise in power and they continue to push on and they get involved in they allow the politics, the civil war. And then they slip on in there. They slipped on in there. And that's, I mean, they weren't stupid. That's, but they act, the idea that also though, fucking the colonials, because we always say colonials and we have a tendency, especially in America, to only reference the British or the French because they're Caucasian. But they never bring up Spain or Portugal, who very much did as much colonizing as the others. They were the first ones. And then Europe decided, oh shit, we gotta colonize some shit too. If you watch History of the Entire World, that is explained in a very comical fashion because that's exactly what they did. They're like, oh, well, now we're different religions. We have to get our own shit because we don't share it anymore. So I can't imagine what Taranaga and the rest of everyone was feeling in that room to hear the caudacity or audacity of these powers to assume that or to be plotting to take over. And not only take over, they've been doing it. Because he goes, oh, they've got bases. Like, oh, you need to point out on a map where all these bases are. Oh, no, I can show you right now. Everywhere. Macau. They got Ronin here. They've got guns here. Mariko's like, swear on your God you telling the truth right now. Because this is some game-changing shit. And he's like, I swear. And it really is. Because now every time he signs that black ship to go out to harbor, he is putting his people in a position of on the back foot of power. But not only that, because he gives him the West Palace, and they know that he's the one that is the, what do they call him? He's the one that has to sign the documents to release the ships. He's in charge of all the trade. So John is of the mindset that he needed to cut, like needed to get to the heart of what you're really up against. And he tells them, you know, you need to forget about your war. You're outnumbered here.
I am inevitable.
This is the second time he's managed to get Taranaga to smile. Because he knows he's kind of a fool, but it's that type of bravery and confidence that is, I don't know, inspiring and can be useful. When the palace is being attacked by the assassin as she's going through killing everyone, I think it's very telling that he went immediately to protect Taranaga. Although Taranaga already handled the situation, he still stepped in front of the assassin and took the assassin's blade and was more than willing to lay down his life for him in that moment. And I think that solidifies their relationship in a way that words and dialogue wouldn't have been able to do. Because he knows that this man, whatever his allegiances is, it's not to harm me. And if I look out for him, he will look out for me. Like, there's something that man to man that tells a lot about a person. And just like with the Spanish men falling, or yeah, the Portuguese men falling over into the water. And he's like, yeah, I don't leave men behind. I rescue him, even though technically he's my enemy. He's not done anything against me. And thus, you know, that mutual respect. I like that developing between them, although they haven't had a lot of private conversation. And Torunaga's gamble paid off. We go back to Osaka a year ago. The Taiko is dying. He talks to his son. The daimyos are there. Notice Ishido was not in the room. He was outside of the room. And we see some looks being passed between his, I think that was the Taiko's wife. I can't remember what her name was, but there was definitely some looks between her and Torunaga. Taiko wants to talk to him alone after his poor son says, well, will you have eyelashes and fingernails when I meet you in the other life, because you're missing those now. He kind of turns away in that moment and dismisses everyone, because I think that he knows that his son is about to be thrown to the vultures, and him surviving, his legacy surviving, is very much weighing on him, which leads to the conversation he has where he offers Torunaga the role of shogun, but Torunaga turns it down, saying, no, this will just cause all of my enemies to unite against me. And he says, wise man, I've chosen a council of regents, and you're going to be on there with some other names. He tells him he's very wise for this, but he also knows that there's going to be a problem. It's going to be a problem that they're going to be fighting for power, that he worries about the civil wars, and he worries about his son. We saw that that woman, his wife, definitely had no love for the priest in the room, because she said he could take his religion and shove it up his ass, or his last rites, because it seems as if he was going to be converted to Christianity to get into heaven. That was his intention, although they were talking about the Buddha. And I didn't want to say that that was the major religion in Japan, because I was pretty sure it wasn't. And so I Googled it. It is Shintoism, if I'm saying that correct. Torunaga is given the task, though, of raising his son properly so that he is able to rule to the age of 16, because that's a crazy age to be able to be ruling over an entire kingdom. Torunaga is continuously being pushed into this position of power to become the next shogun. And circumstances seem to be leading that ever further, pressed on by Ishido's need to have him impeached so that his entire clan can be taken out, because they're getting too powerful for his or their comfort. They have returned the queen. There really was a birth of his child, so that wasn't an excuse. It just seems to be very coincidental. But it's really hard to tell, because I will say, for a man that knows he's going to be executed, he certainly is not playing the game as if he is surrendering to his fate. He knows that by keeping this barbarian, that that's going to cause a divide with the Christians that fear him for whatever reason, which is going to cause a divide between the regent councils, which is exactly what it did, because Ishido wanted the vote to happen because he's tired of being a bureaucrat. He wants to put that armor on. He's very ambitious to be shogun himself. And they know after him, he's going to be the most powerful in the land. So it's all about getting rid of his one enemy. But they refuse to do it without the barbarian being killed. So that causes Taranaga to see how Ishido is going to deal with that wrench, which he does by basically saying, my hands are tied, but this barbarian can be useful to you. That's what Yabu said to him. And I love that from Yabu. Because it's almost like, yeah, this is a guy who saved my life, right? I have an allegiance to my lord. Yes, I might be dead with my lord, but if I have any chance of getting out of that, how can I not betray him, but also still play both sides of it? Because technically he didn't do nothing wrong. He's like, well, I mean, what does your lord want with him? He thinks he can be beneficial. And you know what? I think he could be beneficial too, because while you say everything's cool with the council right now, you know damn well, eventually, them Christian lords are going to be the next ones you're going to have to deal with, and they are far, far more powerful than you, even though you're the second most powerful in the land. So that is able to allow for Taranaga to play his role of saving the prisoner and then allowing him to sleep in his palace. But because he knows and he wants to see how they're going to react to him formally really offering his protection and the secret being out about the bases, because he didn't even hide that shit. As soon as the missionary Martin came back with the treaty to be signed, because they were harassing him about that, he said, oh, well, maybe we should discuss the black ship after we find out how many bases you have. You could just see Martin's face. So he switched rooms with them to see what they would do. And they came for John. So he knows that he really has something valuable in his possession. And now what he does with it is going to be game changing. Because he even pointed out in the first episode, I think that we've all been brought together about fate. And they definitely believe in fate in Japan. He's not a man that says a lot. He has a sense of humor. I love that about him. He comes in with his hawks to talk to Mariko. He's guiding her to not tell people his plans, because Hiromatsu's like, I know you're smarter than me. I don't get what's going on. But she's able to very quickly point it out, which I guess is a good time to talk about Mariko, who also has a relationship with Martin the priest. And while there is the tension she has with John because of their differing religions, well, more that he is trying to get her to change her mind about her religious leaders, she has a loyalty to her lord. And I think that that is true and honest. And I think she respects Taranaga a lot. And despite her being married to a guy that seems like a bit of a douchebag, because they were talking about John, how he has blue eyes and what his hair looks like, because no one's ever seen anyone that quite looks like this foreigner, he comes in all sourpuss, like, you got my son, laughing like a little girl. There's definitely a past with her, because Martin said, have you still had the things on your mind from the last time that you confessed to me, and I'm going to pray for you. And this new role, she's talking about practicing her Portuguese, but she's been learning Portuguese for 14 years now. So I think she's probably an expert. But Taranaga has taken a special interest in her, and I think she she ascends to the praise of that. And I really like her very quiet, calm demeanor. But there is fun with her. There's fun with quite a few women. Achiba, I think that was her name. She had me cracking up when you saw about your fat ass. I was like, oh, we dropping bars. So I like the camaraderie between the household and that everyone ran to protect their lord. There is a true reverence there, I believe. Then the shinobi assassin, which is a maid, shows up to kill Blackthorn, and she was just taking people out.
I'm a boss ass bitch, 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 bitch.
But Taranaga was waiting. They was all looking for him, and he was just calmly, he was looking at his sword. He knew something was about to pop off. He could feel it. And he took care of her with one swing. Didn't even keep his sword out.
I'm disrespectful as the fuck.
That's when Blackthorn rushes into the room and we find out who her true target was. I love that he still didn't bother with trying to fight her. He just pushed her out into the garden like trash. That was far sexier than it should have been. I was like, ooh.
Baby.
I think I've talked about all of the factors other than the one question I have, which is, if this was going on during Tycho's reign, what implications does that, if any, have to do with his death? Because that was only a year ago. I thought that was like years ago, but this is only very recently. And if they're training Ronin to go after the daimyos and they've got their own particular army, not to mention this black ship, it could, like I mentioned earlier, consolidate power between Ishido and Taranaga, but I feel like Ishido would want to deal with that on his own. Taranaga is not someone he feels is worth or should be in the position of power that he is in. So no, I don't see them teaming up. But how is he going to utilize this information going forward? Oh, I did forget to mention when John was saved, how Yabu was like, because he said thank you in Japanese. He's like, oh, he's just a dog that needs a master. And he made him say, I'm a dog. Oh, he's so rude, but also I get it. You was talking mad shit. Mad shit. Ain't been stopped talking mad shit. So the embarrassment and humiliation in that moment felt kind of warranted. And the idea that he didn't want to take another bath within a week because the Japanese bathe every day. Something that Europeans were not doing. I'm not saying Europeans didn't have, like, they're walking around in absolute the most foul of odor. Because there's a lot of historical debate on the whole, did we stink back then? I think in the context of someone currently going back in time, yes, we would think they stunk. Maybe not to high hell like we're imagining, but to our standards, yeah, we would consider stinking because anyone who doesn't take a bath within 2 days was like, ew, you nasty. Why aren't you bathing? So that's why we have this, it's funny. It's ironic, really, that this everyday bathing thing really came from a country that they didn't have the respect for is considering being civilized. I say it all the time. Civilization, our notions, especially European notions, not even say our notions, because I think they had a lot of Africans, Egyptian. I mean, you go through the history, a lot of people were doing a lot of shit better than the Europeans. No offense. It's just history. But yeah, a lot of the European history wouldn't even been salvaged from the Greeks if it wasn't for the Muslims, but they're the backwards ones. So I like bringing in those differences in the culture when it comes to being cultured, right? So he doesn't, he just smells himself like, I don't get the point, but eventually he's going to get it, because when you bathe every day and you realize you're not going to get the flux, that's what they are taught, because they're still dealing with the five humors over there. Whereas in Japan, they're fucking doing dental surgery. They've done aneurysms. They've done brain surgery by this time. Yeah, that's pretty hysterically funny. I think I've mentioned and rambled on enough all the points I wanted to make. If you want to send feedback, once again, blackercouch@gmail.com, or you can leave a comment below. My social media will be there as well. Make sure to subscribe. Until next time, peace, hair grease, and black magic.